Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome back to the latest Liverpool Echo Blood Red Podcast. Paul Gorse, David Lynch and Richard Garnett are all alongside myself, Matt Addison, as we talk through the latest LFC talking points across the next half an hour or so. Gorsey, I'll come to you first. Obviously, we'll talk through the game on Saturday against Chelsea. I mean, the biggest thing for me coming away from it really was just the difference really between the two games in or at Wembley in the cup finals last season, Liverpool and Chelsea. Compare it to this. We knew there was a drop-off, but that was kind of the thing that I thought coming away from that game. What did you make of it?
Two teams who... we're having struggling seasons, really. You know, you could tell it was, what was it, 8th against 10th, just for how, the atmosphere wasn't great to begin with, was it? 12:30 kickoffs really do bring out the best in Anfield, but I kind of had a hope during the week that with it being Chelsea and with it being a big fixture and all that kind of stuff, we'd have seen something a little bit similar to the Manchester City game when Anfield really roared on Liverpool over the line, particularly, you know, once that goal got ruled out for the last 25 minutes or so. But it just never got going at all. And when that happens, the players always find it difficult to kind of rouse the troops, and even more so when it's a team playing with virtually no confidence. So it was just a little bit of a perfect storm to combine to produce one of the most ordinary games of football I think I've seen at Anfield, in all honesty. It was just, I can't even think of one chance. Mudrick obviously hit the side netting when he came on, didn't he? I thought Cody Gakpo should have done better with an early one in the first half. Chelsea had the goal ruled out, but other than that, it was just nothing to write home about, was there? And I kind of wrote after the game that two teams who were struggling with their kind of transfer strategies at the moment in wildly contrasting ways. You know, Chelsea are going hell for leather, aren't they, and bringing in anyone left, right and centre, and they've spent about $400 million under the Todd Bowley ownership. And that's only one and a half transfer windows. Whereas Klopp, down the other end, would sorely love to improve his midfield ranks, I'm sure, but having already brought Cody Gakpo to the club at the start of January, there's pretty much no more money left in the pot. So it's two clubs who aren't quite getting the balance right in the transfer market, and we're seeing that with the seasons that they're having. And it was no real surprise to see Liverpool struggle up top. You know, no Jota, no Firmino, no Diaz. Darwin Nunez is only fit enough for a second-half cameo. Cody Gakpo still adjusting to life in the Premier League. I'm not sure Harvey Elliott on the left did anything really. I think it would be harsh on him to play him out of position. It was just a really tepid game of football, wasn't it? And me and Lynch, you were there freezing our you-know-whats off, and I don't think either of us particularly enjoyed it.
No, it wasn't a particularly enjoyable game, was it? I think as well, Rich, as myself and you mentioned on Twitter yesterday, you watched the Arsenal-Manchester United game. You compare that to what Liverpool and Chelsea put in the day before. It just really did feel like a big contrast in that. It really was not great to watch.
Well, the key difference was that game yesterday was enjoyable. Simple as that, really. That was a great football match. We shouldn't give too much credit for Man United on this channel, I'm sure, but they played their part in what was a cracking football game. But of course, the real takeout was how brilliant Arsenal were and eventually won a game with you know, relentless attacking. And attacking looks like a bit of an endangered species for Liverpool at the moment. It seems to be the sort of spells of sustained pressure are few and far between. And the game on Saturday was I predicted on Friday 0-0. And I don't think I was Nostradamus to have done that, to be honest with you. I had the luck of two struggling sides and who were quite likely to cancel each other out. And so it turned out in the end. The whole spectacle was pretty dull. In terms of the atmosphere, I do think there's something to be said there, and you know, a greater atmosphere could have been created. That kickoff time doesn't help anyone, absolutely. But the bottom line is Liverpool have been so good for the last few seasons that the level of expectation has gone through the roof now. And there will be a proportion of supporters, even you know, long-standing ones who've seen it all, who will turn up expecting to win, and it's difficult to get out of that mindset, I think. And I think the penny has dropped now that you know, Liverpool are almost in sort of a bit of a going back to basics situation at the moment. The one positive was the you know, put together two clean sheets, which was an absolute necessity. And that is something to build on, however dull and rather uninspiring it may be.
Yeah, there was a definite shift, wasn't there, Lynch? You know, it's something we've spoken about a few times over the last few weeks, of kind of just do the basics, defend, keep a clean sheet, and then hopefully you can grab a goal at the other end. I mean, on this occasion, Liverpool went maybe too far the other way and didn't really ever look like scoring, but at least it was, they got one element of that right. They did look pretty solid defensively.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of ropey moments from set pieces, which I think you do miss Van Dijk around those, just his presence and ability to organise. You know, I think that was sort of some of Chelsea's biggest threat really was around that. But generally in the game, Liverpool dealt with Chelsea's threat quite well. And as you say, it is like we said in previous podcasts, really, particularly after Brighton, is you just didn't want to see the manager just keep trying the same things that weren't working over and over. And as a starting point when you're building any team is to go back to basics and make your defence and your protection of your defence as solid as you possibly can. And Liverpool have done that. And yeah, it came at the expense of sort of attacking football. And you hope, you know, the ability to bring Nunez back in and you know, the danger that he poses in terms of his pace and physicality, that shall help him. It should help improve things going forward in terms of that. And also you hope Gakpo settling. But it may just be the case that this is just going to be how it is for Liverpool going forward. If they're just going to be a side who looks to defend and try and hit on the counter if they can, and maybe sort of improvement in terms of the attacking football isn't really going to come until Gakpo's a bit more settled, until maybe you get Jota back, and maybe a bit further down the line get Diaz back. It's probably just something Liverpool fans are going to have to suck up. It just is a difficult season, isn't it? And you know, sometimes you've just got to take them on the chin and think that, yeah, it's not going to be sparkling football between now and May. But, you know, if Liverpool can be defensively solid and just give themselves that basis to build on, then, you know, maybe we will start to see some promise towards the end of the season. And then obviously we've spoken about it so many times, but it's a huge summer coming up.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, functional, not necessarily the worst thing when you think of how dysfunctional they've been at certain points this season. And we've said many times, Gorsi, that changes did have to be made for Liverpool. There was a couple of big calls in terms of the starting 11, obviously Jordan Henderson and Fabinho amongst the substitutes, Stefan Bacicic starting the game, which was, you know, a big call, I think, as well as he did it. It was a bold move from Jurgen Klopp. I mean, he is one of those certainly that came out with plenty of credit.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was a few calls we entered after Tuesday night at Wolves for Bacicic to be given his full Premier League debut. And I must admit, I was a little bit surprised when he was in the starting 11, not because of anything he did or didn't do against Wolves. I just thought, with it being such a big game, Klopp might have erred on the side of caution and went with his more experienced midfielders. But fair play to Klopp for having the bottle to do it, and fair play for Bacicic for not letting himself or anyone else down, because I thought he had a really strong game. And I thought it was a little bit of a kick up the backside to the likes of Henderson and Fabinho that they were, let's face it, they were dropped for this one, weren't they? It wasn't a case of resting them because Liverpool have only got three games in the next 3 weeks, and that's the kind of schedule that Jurgen Klopp absolutely loves. So it wasn't a case of leaving them out for bigger games down the line. It was very much a, you lads haven't done the business for me this season, so you're not undroppable. And fair enough, because I don't think there's anyone this season who've covered themselves in glory for Liverpool and should be beyond reproach when it comes to taking them out of the team. So it was a little bit of a different midfield, wasn't it, to what we've been used to in terms of Liverpool in big games. You know, Naby Keita starting his first start in the Premier League since May. Obviously, Bicicic making his full Premier League debut, and Thiago, who has been much improved over the last couple of games. So, just a little bit of a message to Fabinho and Henderson in particular that, you know, you've got to start booking up your ideas, because, you know, it's all well and good these players coming out and delivering the key messages, you know, like in the programme notes from Henderson, and I've seen Trent Alexander-Arnold with a similar interview where everyone's kind of accepting that it's not good enough and things must improve and he has to improve and all that. And that's all well and good, and they are the right tones that you want to hear from these players, but they've got to start showing it on the pitch, because since Liverpool came back from the World Cup, I can't really see anything that they've been working on. You know, they seem to have regressed, if that was possible, from what was a really difficult first half of the season. Obviously, they had the big win against Tottenham and followed that on with a decent win at home to Southampton. But, you know, that Aston Villa game aside, they've been really poor, and they were very fortunate to beat Leicester, you know, a couple of comical own goals to give them the win there. And since then, it's just completely nosedived in the Premier League. So it was a little bit back to basics on Saturday. It was a bit more structured. Liverpool closed gaps and shortened the spaces in between the midfield and the defence. But I suppose the kind of flip side of that is they didn't offer much in an attacking sense. They didn't get anyone kind of overlapping Mohamed Salah for interdrifting field, or you know, I think Liverpool missed Alexander-Arnold's poise from wide areas at times, even though I thought Milner did well enough getting, you know, up and down the pitch. But it was a little bit of a surprise that he made 8 changes on Tuesday and didn't make 6 or 7 again for this one. But maybe that serves as a little bit of a notice to the likes of even Joel Matip, who was left out as well, that, you know, you can't take your place for granted at the moment when results are not where they should be.
Yeah, it's exactly what Liverpool have been looking for, isn't it, really, Rich, in terms of having these options to come in. They've maybe had a few injuries at certain times. They've not really been able to change things up, but that was a bit of a message. It'd be interesting, actually, to see what they do next weekend with who retains their place and who comes back out again.
Well, Klopp said in his presser the other week that he's not overly loyal. I guess he was trying to make a bit of a point there that he's not scared to make changes. He may have... We know he's probably had his favourites down the year and players that have served him well. We've probably seen how much he's used James Milner this season, probably a lot more than even James Milner probably expected to play, but he seems to have played as much as anyone, really. And what that means going forward, I don't know. But I think what he did on Saturday was probably try to pick a team from players who were in form. Or rather, not pick the ones that weren't in form or the ones that had let him down. Obviously, Matip had I think it was against Brighton, he had a pretty disastrous performance. Fabinho's just not been at the races for what reason. Looks like he's towing a caravan half the time. And Henderson has been in and out, really, hasn't he? Looked very good in the World Cup, ironically. But again, as club captain, has not really been able to cement his own place in that midfield, and obviously Milner in it for Trent. So, and then Elliott, who worked his socks off in the FA Cup match, I actually didn't think he'd play just because of the balance of the team, but he's found a place for him on the left hand side. I did feel like he was a little bit of a square peg in a round hole there, but probably didn't do him any favors having to move over to that side. But again, it just kind of backs up the thought process that he just wants to pick players who have shown form or have put in good performances and then deserve to be back in. So whether he'll continue with that sort of philosophy, I mean, it's a pretty straightforward one, isn't it? But you know, what I mean is at the expense of some of his more established first team players, we'll have to see. And I guess, you know, they've got a few days now to prepare for that pretty tricky looking trip to Brighton, which didn't yield a very good result and an even worse performance last time out. And I just get the feeling that that will be another example. I don't want to say bats to the wall, but certainly a defensively minded approach, and where it would be more important just not to lose the match than rather than try and go out and win it.
Yeah, I suppose as well, Lynch, you can kind of look at it and say, well, like you said before, Darwin Nunez was only able to play a little bit of it. Trent was, again, only able to play a little bit. If you put those two players in, but play in a similar sort of way, possibly the counter-attacks and the overlapping runs and all of that sort of stuff, maybe Liverpool can redress the balance a little bit in terms of their attack just from those couple of players coming back into that team.
Yeah, because I think one of the biggest issues was sort of the ability to, once Liverpool had won it in a deep position, to play the way out in a sensible way and sort of find ways through Chelsea's formation. That was something they really struggled with. And then also your only real out ball in terms of pacing behind was Mo Salah down that right-hand side. And he did try that a few times, but Chelsea were wise to it because ultimately that was the only one pacey forward they had to cover. You know, Gakpo's not particularly electric. It's not really Harvey Elliott's game to go in behind a lot. So that, you know, that made it kind of easy for Chelsea. Whereas I think if you throw Trent in there with his range of passing and Nunez in terms of his pace in behind, that, yeah, gives Liverpool a lot more threat. And I'd be interested to see sort of, you know, if he does stick with that midfield configuration and this way of playing going forward, if he does that, yeah, what effect it will have to bring those two in. Because I don't, you know, we know that Trent wasn't dropped because of reasons of form. I think he has been slightly better after the World Cup break. I think, you know, he's one of the few that's actually seen a bit of an uptick in his form. And obviously Nunez had the injury concern. So you'd expect both of those when they're ready to go to be thrown in. And yeah, it could make Liverpool a bit more threatening. And you know, that's what we need, because, you know, we said about going back to basics in this formation and change the way of playing. But, you know, you do still need that pace and that ability to play out on the break. And that was something that was sort of sorely missed against Chelsea.
I thought it was interesting, obviously, they did play Elliott off the left and Salah on the right and Gakpo through the middle, because it would have made a bit of sense to me if you'd have maybe had Salah central and Gakpo on one wing and Elliott playing in his favoured position. I don't know whether I'm reading too much into it, but it kind of feels like they were very, very keen to get Cody Gakpo through the middle. Whether we see him out wide in future games, I don't know. Well, that seemed very, very deliberate to me.
It did, especially when you factor in that when Nunez came on, Nunez went down the left, didn't he? And Gakpo stayed through the middle. I don't profess to have seen loads of Gakpo with PSV, but I'm pretty sure he was almost exclusively a left winger. So not sure whether they're trying to reinvent him and adjust his game to play through the middle in English football. But you know, 4 games into his Liverpool career now, I'm still waiting for him to, I mean, not necessarily tear up any trees or anything, but just to show what he's about a little bit. Must admit, I'm not too sure what his overall game is about at the moment. Is it running in behind? Is it, you know, coming short to feet or stretching the defence? Still waiting to see. I mean, obviously, we're not writing him off because it would be foolish to after, you know, however many minutes he's had. It's not loads, is it? But especially coming into a team that's struggling a bit. But yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more from him over the next couple of weeks, especially while Firmino, Jota and Diaz are still out injured. But yeah, it does seem as though they are keen to get him more central rather than out on the left. I mean, I'm not a tactician by any stretch of the imagination, but for me, it would have made a bit more sense to play Nunez through the middle and Gakpo on the left when Nunez came onto the pitch. But the good news is that he's back at least and will provide, you know, Liverpool with a bit more of a thrust, shall we say, going forward. I thought Liverpool missed them actually against Brighton, because Brighton were happy to push on and they were almost playing on the halfway line at times. And like I say, Gakpo reluctant to run in behind, always looking to come short with it. So, you know, Nunez is on the pitch, Liverpool can knock it into space, and more often than not, Nunez is quicker than the defenders, isn't he? So I think that might make Saturday's game a little bit more of a different prospect. But it sounds strange to say, but, you know, returning to Brighton so soon is, you know, it's a daunting task for Liverpool and one where they're probably not going to be considered favourites for it, which does sound strange, but that's the kind of rut that Liverpool are in at the moment, and you know, testament to how well Brighton are doing.
Yeah, it certainly looks like a tricky game. I'm sure we'll talk much more about that on Friday. But Rich, just in terms of Gakpo and what we've seen of him so far, I think I'm particularly interested to see what he does with Darwin Nunez. We've not seen a lot of the two of them together so far. I mean, we've not seen a lot of him at all, full stop. But certainly the two of them together, I think, could be something interesting to watch out for.
Well, I don't think we've seen a lot of Cody Gakpo in the games that he's actually played, to be honest. I think it's been quite a quiet introduction or start to his Liverpool career, especially after how impressive he was in the World Cup. I'm sure he wasn't signed purely on the back of a few good games for Holland. They've obviously been looking at him for a sustained period of time, but I was certainly hoping to see a little bit more from him so far, even in these early stages. I mean, at least Darwin Nunez had butted someone, so we had a bit of entertainment off him in those early games. But I thought it was interesting how all of a sudden Nunez, who's come in for, you know, a fair bit of criticism since his move to Liverpool, I felt like his stock had actually risen in the games that he hasn't played in, to the point where now we're very much looking forward to, you know, seeing him back. It was, you know, the feeling the cop was, you know, get him on Saturday. People couldn't wait to see him on the pitch and see what a difference that he could make. And he's certainly gone off more of an outball, I think, especially whilst Salah seems to be pretty marginalised at the moment. I'm not quite sure what can be done to get a bit more out of Mohamed Salah at the moment. But whether it's a switch down the middle or just trying to bring him into play more. Is he being marked out of games because there's not too much to worry about on the other side of the pitch? I don't know. But it's a sort of combination between Gakpo and Nunez is hard to gauge, isn't it? Because Nunez has only been at the club since the summer. Gakpo's only just arrived. In terms of Nunez, we've still been talking about how he's had the period of adaptation into settling into this Liverpool team and the way that they play. And now we're effectively asking him to hold the hand of Gakpo to go through the same process that he went through, when perhaps he's still not quite firing on all cylinders in terms of his goal return or goals per chances, if you want to put it that way. So it's a difficult period. It's a transitional period. And of course, Liverpool are having to ask questions of themselves in the way that they play with the personnel at their disposal. So it could be a very different looking approach to matches than we've come accustomed to for the last few years. And there's no real knowing which way it will go, is there? If it was to put my money on anyone to score against Brighton, though, I think it would be Nunez over Gakpo, just on the basis of what I've seen so far.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, certainly be interesting. Obviously, Cody Gakpo, the only Liverpool January signing so far, probably the only one that they will do this month, which leads us on to the next topic, Lynchy, around the Deloitte Money League and all of that sort of stuff. I'm going to sort of open the floor to you, really. It was your suggestion that we talked about this, so I will throw over to you for this. Apologies for throwing that back
on you, Lynchy.
Wow, absolutely full of regrets now. No, in all seriousness, obviously, you know, huge record revenue shown in that, up to third in the Deloitte Money League, and probably most significantly of all, being above Manchester United. You know, that is something that you think, you know, for all the criticism Fenway Sports Group are getting at the moment, if you'd have said, you know, when they came in, what is it, 11 years ago now, that Liverpool will leapfrog Manchester United in the Deloitte Money League, they'll be up to third. You know, City's position you maybe can't take too seriously, but, you know, just Real Madrid above them, and that they would have won in that time as well, the Premier League, the Champions League, the FA Cup, League Cup, Club World Cup, you know, just sort of really is indicative of a club that's in really good financial health and is positioned to challenge regularly. Obviously, there have been some issues this season in terms of, you know, and some criticism around the spending, but, you know, I've got a piece that's coming out, I think possibly tomorrow, Matt, it's up to you, around that, about, you know, sort of where has the money gone and why Liverpool's revenues are up so high, but they may be not big spenders in the transfer market. But I do think, you know, without giving too much away on that, I think, you know, there's a period coming up now where Liverpool really can spend. And I think, you know, there's been some big infrastructure projects taken on, COVID, a lot contributing to their inability to sort of spend those huge revenues. But coming up to now and going forward, it looks like a really sort of positive picture. And like I say, it's just not something you could have seen over a decade ago when Liverpool was struggling to qualify for the Champions League regularly. You know, they just looked absolutely miles off it. It just says a lot about the work that's been done by Fenway Sports Group and why I think the club will be so attractive to potential investors in terms of it being up for sale at the minute. Because, you know, yeah, just look at that position on the Deloitte Money League, and, you know, that will open a few eyes, I'm sure.
I'll come back to you as well on this, because I would imagine, and I don't know this for sure, but I imagine that the climb up that Money League table is largely because of the sustained Champions League football. If they were to miss out this season, even if it was only for one season, that probably would have a big impact, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I suppose, if, you know, when the next sort of the next league comes out next season, and if Liverpool aren't the Champions League, which is what we expect, it would have an adverse impact on finances. But there's so much else that is propping that up in terms of, you know, commercial revenue and areas of revenue that have been expanded since FSG have come in, that makes Liverpool just a lot more robust than they were. And, you know, I think when they initially came in, it was a lot about, okay, just get into the Champions League by any means and then build from there. But Liverpool have put foundations in place now. And I think, you know, one season without Champions League football, and you know, look at the squad they've got and the signings they're capable of making still. You know, I can't imagine that if Liverpool fall out of it, it'll be a similar case to, say, Arsenal, who fell out and just weren't able to get back in. I think Liverpool have got the foundations there to get in pretty quickly again. And, you know, there certainly won't be a shortage of money in terms of paying for the wage bill and what they'll do in transfers up. You know, whether Fenway Sports Group will opt to go down that route of actually spending it, that's up for debate. But I think the money's certainly there, and that's because of, like I say, the commercial growth and all the other things that go with it to create these huge revenues.
Yeah, it's certainly something that's going to be really interesting to see what happens over the next few months. But we haven't lost complete hope yet of Liverpool getting into the top four, Gorsty. You look at the games to come, it does feel like an important period. It wasn't the greatest result, obviously, over the weekend against Chelsea, but it was a bit of a change in the way that they play. I mean, what sort of hopes have you got at this point? I know I ask you this question every single week. It probably hasn't changed massively since last week, but are you any more hopeful that Liverpool can make up that ground, or what's your sort of current stance on it all as it stands?
In terms of the performances, no. I think I was saying to Lynch on Saturday, just by virtue of it being Liverpool, I kind of fooled myself into thinking, well, they're going to have to play better today. You know, they can't be as poor as they were in the last match. And then they proceed to just be as poor as they were in the last match, if not worse. And that's going back maybe, possibly the Leicester game, which is around about, you know, a little under a month ago now. I was thinking, well, surely they'll improve against Brentford, and they would, you know, well worse. And then I was thinking, well, surely they've got to improve against Wolves in the Cup, and it was a similar type of performance. And then the Nadir at Brighton. And so, you know, it's not based on any confidence, me thinking, Liverpool can turn this around, because, okay, they have done it in the past, but at the moment they just look so bereft of confidence. They've got no energy. They've got too many injuries to key players, you know, up the top end of the pitch. And they're just not looking like scoring goals that are going to win them games. But then I look at the table and I think 10 points behind the top four, they've got a game in hand. They've still got to play Newcastle. They've still got to play Manchester United. They've still got to play Tottenham. So you'd imagine they'd have to win all three of those games and two of them at home for them to have any chance of finishing in the top four. But it's not unassailable, is it? It's not completely out of reach just yet. So it's got to improve. It's got to turn around at some stage. But the flip side of that is there hasn't been too much evidence of it changing, has it, anytime soon? It's not like Liverpool have put in kind of, I mean, you know, when they haven't performed in the past, it's been one-off and it's been a little bit of an off day at the office, and that can happen. But this is more of a pattern, and you can probably count on one hand the amount of good performances that Liverpool have had all season, and you probably include all competitions in that, really. So this is a more worrying trend And when Liverpool have had sticky patches in the past under Klopp, there's always been a little bit of a key indicator as to why that's happened. You know, you look back 2 years ago when they had no senior centre-backs and there was no crowd in the grounds. But this one, it's OK, they do have injuries and they have had injuries, but it's, you know, even when players have been fit, they've still, you know, massively underperformed. And that's what worries me now more so than where they are on the table, which is already a particularly dire set of circumstances. So, yeah, other than that, it's all positive.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, I think that's the frustration, I think, for me, really, is you look at this weekend and Liverpool drew with Chelsea, but then, you know, obviously Brentford, you'd imagine that Liverpool could finish above them, but they drop points, but they're still ahead of Liverpool. Brighton drop points, but they're still ahead of Liverpool. Even Newcastle, Rich, up in third, they drop points, but Liverpool didn't gain any ground on them. At some point, Liverpool have to do their job before you start then looking at all the other teams above them.
Well, it comes to something when you see Fulham beat Chelsea and you think, get in, and then you realise that that's actually a bad result for Liverpool. And that's kind of where we're shopping at the moment, isn't it? You're looking out for the results of Brentford, Brighton and Fulham before Manchester City. And yeah, that's a slightly depressing thought, really, isn't it? But, and that's no disrespect for those three teams who've obviously built decent teams of decent managers and climb the table on their own merits. But I mean, the good news is Liverpool have only played half their Premier League games. They're only at the midway point. They've still got another 19 matches to sort of resurrect this season. And so there's plenty of points to be won. The bad news is there's zero evidence at the moment of them being capable of doing that. Liverpool played Man United, I think it was the third game of the season. And up to that point, United didn't have a point. United won the game. And I'll stand corrected if I'm wrong, but I don't think Liverpool at any point have been above Manchester United in the table since that game. So, and they're now 10 points behind them now. So if that's the case up to this point in the season, what evidence is there of them having any chance of actually catching up Manchester United and overtaking them? I would say pretty little. I wouldn't be placing any money on it, that's for certain. So if you look at the top four now, Arsenal looking pretty good for the league as it stands, unless they get caught by Manchester City. Manchester City are definitely going to finish in the top four. I can pretty much guarantee that. And that leaves two spaces up for grabs, one of which is looking like it could be United, the way they've been playing and the way they've been improving, which leaves you banking on a resurgent Newcastle to have a bit of a wobble and drop out. And that, to me, feels like Liverpool's best hopes of qualifying for the Champions League. For me personally, and I'm sure it's a view shared by quite a few others and maybe everyone on this podcast, but expectations have been well reset. I've pretty much resigned myself to the fact that they won't finish in the Champions League. If they do, it'll be a bit of a Brucey bonus. It'll be a year out and trips to Braga and Zagreb next year instead of Madrid and Barcelona.
I wanted to say, actually, in terms of expectations and the importance of that, is that, you know, sometimes, you know, I don't want to say kill all hope, but I think sometimes there is, you know, there's a benefit to sort of saying it would be incredibly out of the blue if Liverpool started performing in the way that they have in past seasons. You know, now if that turnaround in form suddenly came now, I think, you know, you look at some of the issues they've got, and I just think so many of them aren't going to solve themselves until the summer. I think, you know, you know Fabinho and Henderson, I think they just need a pre-season and a reset. Nunez settling in, the same with Gakpo, the injury to Diaz. He's probably not going to be back to his best to the end of the season. Same with Jota, who's missed so much football. So I think sometimes you've just got to accept that, you know, that these bad seasons can happen, and that there isn't going to be this sudden turnaround, and going into every game and getting really het up about the idea that Liverpool haven't played as they have played in recent years, it just probably isn't going to happen, and that's fine. But, you know, alongside that, if you accept this is going to be a difficult season, and as Rich suggests, maybe end up in the Europa League or the Europa Conference League, who knows, that is a bit of something different to attack next season, but also that, you know, sudden improvement is not out of the question next season. You know, it's not like Liverpool are terrible now and they have to be terrible next season. Look at Arsenal, where they've come from. They've, you know, although it's been a gradual process, they've very, very suddenly gone from not qualifying for the Champions League to challenging for the title. Say, you know, Manchester United, that improvement has been very rapid under a manager who knows what he's doing. And I think Liverpool, you know, for all the flaws at the moment, you're never as far away as you think from being a top side. And I think, you know, Jurgen Klopp has shown he can build that team. He can, you know, and this squad only probably needs tweaks. It's not as bad as people think. And that, you know, okay, if the remainder of this season is difficult, and I expect it likely will be, and I don't think they will get near the top four, that's fine. Just accept it. But know also that the building blocks are there, and it, you know, steers into the financial stuff I was talking about earlier. The possibility is there for things to very rapidly improve next season. And, you know, that, you know, these things can happen in football. The season might be terrible, but it can very quickly turn around.
Just going back to a point Rich made there when he mentioned Newcastle and United as kind of Liverpool's front runners, if you like, for the top four. Newcastle have drawn three of the last four games 0-0. Now, I don't think that's been pointed out as much as perhaps it would have if United had done it per se, or certainly Liverpool. Maybe kind of expectations of them, you know, in football are starting to change, and teams are figuring out how to defend against them, and they're starting to drop points, aren't they? You know, so Liverpool have to, for my money anyway, be looking at them and thinking they're the ones who they can get at, and they just need to start putting together a little bit of a run and see where it takes them. And I think that game at St. James's Park will be huge for the overall race for the top four. So yeah, it's just interesting that, you know, for all of the plaudits that they're getting, which, you know, fair play, Eddie Howe has done a really good job there, but now there's, you know, they haven't had a great run, but I think because it's been a little bit unexpected, it's not quite being scrutinised as much as it should, but certainly something to look at, because as I say, if teams are approaching Newcastle a little bit differently, do they quite have the firepower to break through those pack defences, which, you know, Liverpool have had to come up against, you know, for years, haven't they? Like all the top teams. So just something to keep an eye on. And particularly with them losing Chris Wood as well, it'll be interesting to see what they do in terms of the transfer business. So, yeah, just one to keep an eye on, I guess. If I was Liverpool, I'd certainly be looking at them as the potential ones who can drop out of that top four at the moment.
Well, all of a sudden they've become a team to beat, haven't they? There's focus on them where initially there wasn't. They were just sort of quietly, so to speak, climbing the table. But I'd have more confidence in being able to catch Newcastle. I'm not saying Newcastle will definitely finish in the top four, by the way. I think it's quite capable that they could drop out. But I'd have more confidence in that if I thought Liverpool were capable of stringing eight wins together. But I don't think they've done better than four, have they? Without checking, and so that you know, in years gone by, even, you know, in the COVID season where there was a lot of poor results, they still managed to put together that run, didn't they? It might have taken a goalkeeper to score a header in injury time, but it was still a run regardless. And there's just no evidence of that coming to fruition at the moment. And until we get to that point, then it just feels like a tall order.
Yeah, I think the next few games are going to be interesting for Newcastle. They've got this EFL semi-final, haven't they? The two legs with Southampton. They've got West Ham, Bournemouth, then the Liverpool game, then Brighton and Manchester City. So it could be an interesting few games, and we'll see where they are. But like you say, Rich, it will depend more on what Liverpool can do in that period than anything else. And I don't think any of us are particularly confident that Liverpool can put five wins on the spin together. But we shall see. Certainly some big games coming up for Liverpool. It could be a defining period. Of course, we'll keep you updated in all of the usual places. That will do us, though, for today's podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you very soon indeed.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.